Hi, everybody. My name is Julio. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
Woo!
Anybody else out here freaking out? Oh, good. A couple. I'm kind of freaking out. I'm at the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a notorious crier. I'm famous for it. Where I come from, Las Cruces, New Mexico. My home group is Young People in Recovery. We meet every Wednesday night, 6:30. If you're ever there, come see us. And I'll try to get this crime business out of the way. It gets worse when it gets worse when I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And I'm kind of hungry and kind of tired, so it won't be like a total problem. But and I made some notes on the back of my badge, so I'm gonna put those right here and refer to them. And we'll see how it goes. I'm gonna suffer through it like the rest of you guys. Quick story. I think I'm in the right group to qualify me, the right crowd. They love this story at home. One time, I have a dog. He's a little guy that I love very much. He chewed a big hole in the bottom of my boxers while I was passed out face down. And I didn't discover that till the next morning, you know, and I scratched my ass when I was checking the mail. And so that's the kind of drinker I am. I'm a real mess. Just no good, you know. I spent a lot of time. I've never been actually homeless, but I spent a lot of time with no place to lock up my stuff, you know. I live in the streets, but I spent a good portion of my drinking with no keys to anything, you know, and carrying everything I own. So on that note, my dad is here. He's sober 20-some years. And my sister, sitting next to him. She, I don't know if she drinks or not. She's not one of us. I'm just going to try to hit some highlights of things that I love and I've heard. I don't tell my story or anything that gets too difficult for me. Speaking of my father, one of the things I want to share is this. I was 12-step by my father in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that's probably pretty common in the young people's meeting. You know, a lot of times you get parents that are sober. My dad had, right when I started drinking and drugging, my dad quit, actually. Almost simultaneously. And early on, he very desperately, you know, saw his kid going downhill and wanted me to have this. And he would grab me and tell me how great AA is and tell me how much I needed it and how much it turned my life around. And I didn't care for it. I didn't care to hear him. And it went on like that for a long time. I'll tell you this. The reason I cry is because stuff is important. Think things that like mean a lot to me. So there you go. So then I believe my dad read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a portion in there that gives very good, clear directions on how to 12-step people. And it says things like, you know, no lectures, actually that's in a different part, but no lectures to be endured, no axes to grind. You know, we tell them about our drinking, you know, And he started to do those things. And the biggest thing it did for me, you know, growing up, I butt heads with my dad quite a bit, and growing up, in this early time he was trying to 12-step me, it was very easy for me to say it was all his fault, you know, it was my parents' fault. It's their fault that they raised bad kids, obviously. It's their job. They did a bad job. And, you know, when my dad started following the directions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it removed that fight from me. I could no longer say, you know, that he's not being a nice guy. You know, he was nothing but nice to me. And it made AA very appealing. And I also knew that it was AA that changed that for him. You know, I didn't think that he did that by himself. I think you people had that effect on him, which in turn had an effect on me. So I'm very grateful for that. So you can 12-step loved ones. I hear it in meetings a lot that, you can't 12-step your kids, and you can't 12-step people you're close to because you're too close. And albeit it is very difficult, just follow the directions. It's the best way, in my opinion and experience. So there's that. Quick note here. It's nice to be loved. There's a lot of people from home here supporting me. I appreciate that. I've gotten a lot of calls and a lot of texts. You know, people knew I was speaking this morning. And a lot of love and support. I was thinking recently, I had this big thing come apart at work where it was kind of revealed that I was operating in a less than exemplary fashion. And I have a bit of work to do yet. Those people love me no matter what, you know. One of the great things that I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, and I was having a hard time with it. And it came to my mind that, and I don't mean this in an arrogant way, I mean this in the humblest way I can, that I've actually been a positive influence on people's lives, you know. And that's important. You know, I wasn't that before I got here. I was not a positive influence on anybody's life. I'm by no means perfect or got this stuff right or anything like that. You know, far, far from it. But there's other people living good lives, I believe, because I'm here, because people did it for me. And not like it's a direct correlation. It's one of my favorite things to say in meetings is, you know, we never know who saves whose life here. In Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like, you know, you get hit by the, you know, you get an accident or whatever, the paramedics show up and you say, oh, thank you for saving my life. You know, it's hard to do here in AA. You know, it's hard to know who saves who when. And so, but I know that, you know, I know because of the love that I get here that I've had some effect on people. And I'm very grateful for that. What do I got? I might not even take up my whole 20 minutes. I went to a Wacky Paw quite a while ago in San Diego. Some of you were probably there, maybe. No? Wow. All right. There'll be more. I went to Wacky Paw in San Diego. I think this is where I heard this. The speaker was talking, and he was talking. I'll back up a minute. I went to meetings. My dad 12-stepped me. I hung out in AA for a long, long time. You know, I started going to meetings about when I was 16, 17 in there. That's when I was introduced to AA. I got sober when I was 25, and there were a lot of meetings in there, you know, while I was still drinking. And I was in a meeting one time, and there, you know, the people were talking about the things they've lost and this and that and stuff like that, And I was thinking to myself, you know, like, I never had anything to lose. You know, I never got the wife or the house or the car. I mean, I, like, showed up here with a bicycle, and that was it. And you know, I never accumulated those things. I mean, I might have had a couple things, but I burnt the house down when I was 17. And so that, like, took care of that stuff, and then I got here with nothing. But in any case... So I was in a meeting in San Diego at the WAC, and the speaker was talking, and he said, you know, when you're young, a lot of times, and I really related to this, and this is why I want to share it, it's a young people's meeting. He said, you know, when you're young and alcohol has you at that early age, you know, you don't have the watch to give and the wife to give, you know, you don't have all the accumulation of things to give up, you know, that you can let go along the way, and he said the alcohol takes your soul, you know. I really related to that. I remember My best description of the last days of my drinking is the movie Pirates of the Caribbean. It's a great movie. I'm endorsing it here from the podium. But when the bad guys, whoever they are, when the bad guys step into the moonlight and you can see, you know, all their flesh falls away and they just are all skin and bones, that's how I felt. You know, it was a really good. I remember looking in the mirror and just thinking, man, there's just nothing left of you. There's not, you know, there's nothing left, and or very little, you know, very little, and that actually scared me more than anything. You know, I started losing the things I liked about myself. You know, all those things were slipping away, and kind of the things that got me through my adolescence and teenage years. It was like, nah, you're just a degenerate drunk, you know, and good for nothing, just like those pirates. And so, you know, it does. It really. I think young people in the grips of alcohol and alcoholism, it's a little bit different, a little bit. However, I'll say this, which is also on my little note card. You know, we're sitting in a young people's meeting. We're not special in any way, shape, or form, I don't think. There's a lot of specialized meetings, a lot of group young people's meetings, gay and lesbian meetings, African American meetings, you know, on and on and on. The list is long. And what I learned is that it's a trick. We say young people's, and we put it on the sign out front. We say come to the young people's meeting, and all it is a trick. Because when we're young like that, or you know whatever we think is making us different and special, that's how we get you in the door. and then hopefully, oh wow, I didn't think that was that good. That's fantastic. That's how we get you in the door. And then hopefully, if you're lucky, you know, you find out you're just a drunk, like everybody else. Drink too damn much. Can't stop drinking. And the steps are the same. Young or old, you know, high or low, doesn't matter. All the same. Pretty common story. A lot of individuals in here, but alcoholism is pretty common. Also doesn't discriminate, though. You know, it'll take whoever it can get. You know, I heard a good thing in a meeting one time. I'll share this. He says, alcoholism wants me dead, but it'll settle for drunk. And I think that's a good thing. Oh, good. 5 minutes. Perfect. Let's see. What else I got here? All right. I'll talk about my home group. I have a home group. The 29th of this month. If you're in Las Cruces, come visit us. We're going to celebrate 14 years as a group. I'm very happy about that. It's a young people's meeting. There are a few young people in it. It was actually it was actually founded by some oldsters that wanted to save some kids. And I happened to be at the very first meeting. A little story about service. So I got sober in a group called Downtown in Las Cruces. A lot of old-timers, kind of fuddy-duddies. I got sober in that group, and my GSR went to a district meeting. And at that district meeting, she found out that they were starting a young people's meeting. And she came back to my home group and said, "Hey, Julio, they're starting a young people's meeting. You should go to it." And I said, "Fantastic." And I went to it. And I've been a member of that group ever since. I went to that first meeting. The meeting wrapped up. They said, "All right, we're having a group conference." We had a group conference. They said, "All right, you're our GSR." And they made me the GSR, which I kind of liked. I think I'm pretty important, stuff like that. And that meeting's been going strong ever since. And one thing I wanted to share about that group is we've had a lot of ups and downs in that group. People come in, people go, you know, love triangles and whatever other shapes there are. Octagons. Just, I've never been involved in an octagon. Just kidding. maybe a triangle. But that group has gone through a lot of struggles, up and down, personalities. We all got a lot of personality. And, And I've always tried to pretend like that is AA group number one. It's the only one there is. It's the one I go to. And I try not to miss it. You know, it's not like I just get to bail out on that group and go to the other one because I like them better. Or because, you know, those guys are pissing me off or whatever. You know, it's the only group there is. You know, there was a time in Alcoholics Anonymous when there was only one group, you know. And those people stayed sober. And now we have, like, a lot. But as far as my home group goes, I'm committed to that group. And I stay there no matter what. And see what happens. And as a result, I've learned a lot of stuff, you know. I've learned to not hate some people. I've learned to sit back. You know, I've learned to keep my mouth shut. I've learned to speak when I think something's important, you know. A lot of lessons that you don't get to learn, I believe, if you don't stay put and deal with all the crap, you know. And I think I'm better off for it. And the group is still there, you know. We try to stick to traditions. We follow the traditions. And we've had a lot of conversations, you know. Lots and lots of conversations and a few of them over and over and over. And those are some good guys, good people in that group. And we always come to the same place, you know. We try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, the newcomer, you know, at the end of the day. So that's a good deal. So that's it. I've actually made my list, except with what I want to close with. And I have a minute and a half left. This is working out really well. The last time I spoke, it didn't go this smooth at all. I really want to thank everybody here that's here, all you guys for showing up. I mean, holy crap, this is a really big deal. I'm impressed. Look around the room. I think every one of us, you know, at one point was like face down in the shag carpet, couldn't get up, you know. And I actually stole that from that guy right there. And here we are, like alive and well, you know, alive and well. Probably most of us productive members of society or close to it. And that's a really neat deal. So I'm going to close with this. The single solitary best thing I believe I've ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a meeting, I think Sunrise Sobriety. I think that's the name of it. Very early meeting. And the topic was relapse. Somebody was like, oh, I relapsed again. And everybody was going around the room and everybody's talking about relapsing. If I went back out, you know, this would happen and that would happen. And, you know, people talked about getting sober and all the, you know, I've got a nice house and a nice car. And then other people said more, you know, deep stuff about having like their self-respect back and love of their family and stuff like that. And people go around and say, you know, if I went back out, I would lose that. You know, I'd lose all the self-respect I've gained for myself and this and that, so on and so forth. And then it came around and a gentleman named Old Man Mac, who I believe is dead now, and he said, if I were to drink again, he had a lot of time. He said, if I were to drink again right now, he said, I would surely lose the house and I would surely lose the wife and I'd give you the keys to my car and you can take my wallet. He said, but the most important thing, the biggest thing I would lose if I were to drink right now is the ability to show people that we can live without drinking. And it's the best thing I've ever heard. It's why I stay sober. One of the reasons. There's a lot of them. But we can live without drinking, and we can let other people know that it's possible too. And the solution is here in AA, so thank you.
Thank you, Julio. I could definitely identify with a lot that you said, and as somebody that sobered up at 15, hearing and being reminded that, you know, I may not have lost all of the physical things in life, but I did lose my soul, and I thought that was really important to hear today. So thank you for that. Our next speaker is Katie E. from Maryland.
My name's Katie. I'm an alcoholic. This is truly an honor and a privilege to be sitting here and looking out at all these people in a room and be able to walk through Atlanta and I don't know how many people are here, 60, 70,000, I don't know. Probably figure out that number later on. So I have a sobriety date. It's November 7th, 2006. So I got sober when I was 17, which means I'm 25 right now. I'll be 26. I freaked out when I turned 25. I was like, it's all downhill from here. It's a really rough time in my life. And I would say that in meetings and all the old people get really mad at me. But I was like, it's just where I'm at right now. I was like, I'm 25. I'm really old. So, I'm from Maryland. If you know where Maryland people are sitting, they're right here. I have a home group. It's out of the woods. We meet in Ellicott City. It's about, I don't know, like 10, 15 minutes outside of Baltimore. So I'm wearing my Baltimore shirt. I thought that was appropriate. It's not a young people's meeting. I actually call it Out of the Closet. There's a lot of gay people, but it's not officially a gay meeting. It's just a meeting. It's As Bill Sees It. So we do a reading. And it's an awesome home group. It's small and I love it. And I'm there every Tuesday night, usually, unless I'm stuck at work. It's been my home group since I got here. I took like 4 months to pick a home group. My sponsor kept trying to pressure me. And I was like, there's a lot of options. I could check everything out, go to every meeting. I just didn't want to choose. So I picked it. I think there was a girl there. I don't know. That's probably why I chose it. And me and my best friend got sober on the same time. I met her when she was, I was 17. She was 16. I met her about a month in the program. She had just got out of rehab and, she was the only other high schooler in my area. So we both, you know, were doing high school with our big books and going to meetings and there wasn't too many people in that area doing that. That I know of. So I got sober my senior year of high school, and it was a bizarre experience. I got sent to rehab in the beginning of my senior year, and I only took one class during my senior year. It's all you needed to graduate, and I was failing, so I was ready to not graduate. I couldn't show up. I couldn't even do homework. Like, it was English. It was my best subject. And I never showed up, which I just had to be there for like an hour. Like, that's all I had to do. And then I was a student aide during second period, and then I left for work release, which makes it sound like I was in jail, but I wasn't. So I would leave after that, and most of the time I didn't even show up. I just would just wake up, pretend like I was going to school, and my mom was actually at the time in active using herself, because I grew up in these rooms. My mom has been in another program for a long time. So when I got here, I also got an adopted family that's in the program and sober, and they took me in and let me live with them when I was 17. Julio, you made me cry, so now I'm going to start crying too. I'm very emotional as well. I'm a Cancer. Very emotional people, sensitive. So I lived with them for my first year of sobriety. I was like 4 or 5 months sober when I moved in. I don't know, I think I was talking about my mom, which is a touchy subject. She ended up getting sober when I had about 2 years, which is awesome. You know, so it's weird because even though she wasn't in the program at that time, she still was able to like 12-step me. I know like you were talking about with your dad. You know, she knew what to do. She called some people. She called her old sponsor that she still talked to. And she got my number out there. And, you know, they passed my number around to all these women in the program. And this girl ended up picking me up and taking me to a meeting. Probably like 2 days out of rehab or something like that. And this girl called me. It was on my house phone because I didn't have my cell phone. It was taken away. I didn't have a car because my car was taken away. That's what happens when you get sober at 17. Your parents take away all your things. The struggle was definitely real. I didn't know what to do. So this girl called my house phone and she asked if I wanted to go to a meeting, and it was really awkward. It was weird. It was just weird. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And it was like a Friday night and she came to pick me up. It was like we were going on a date. She came in and met my mom, and it was really awkward, and she got in the car. I got in the car with her, and you know, she just started talking to me, and I did not have a lot to say at that time. I was a really hardcore 17-year-old, and I smoked my Newports, and I had my hoodie on all the time, and I looked angry, and it was because I was scared. I was a scared little 17-year-old kid, and you know, you people in these rooms knew that. You could see right through that as much as I tried with my chain smoking and all that, and I didn't even have my lip pierced or any tattoos yet. So I just looked like a scared 17-year-old, despite what I thought. And you know, she started talking to me, and she talked about God, and she talked about a higher power, and you know, she talked about her story, and you know, I wanted what she had. And you know, she started taking me around to meetings, and you know, I met some younger people and all that kind of stuff, and all these girls would give me their numbers after the meetings, and they would be like, call me, and I'm like, oh, okay, no. You know, I was just trying to figure it out. You know, because part of me felt like I was different because I was so young, but part of me felt like, you know, this is where I belong, because I would sit there in rooms and I would hear these stories, and I would hear like where my story stopped and where everybody else's kept going. And, you know, even like when I was in rehab, I knew as much as the last thing I ever wanted to be in my life was an alcoholic. If you had told me when I was about 10 or 11 that by the time I was in high school, I would be doing the things I was doing, blackout drinking and driving under the influence, I would have thought you were crazy. I was a nerdy kid I broke my arm twice in the same year. I had glasses. I was just an awkward kid, and the awkwardness never went away. It's not what I wanted, and something happened. You know, I don't get to decide if I'm, you know, going to go down this path, and it happened. And, you know, so, I think I had a lot of spiritual experiences of the educational variety. I remember I was sitting, in my first 6 months, I was still partying with my friends, but I was sober. Like, I just didn't do anything, and they made sure not to let me do anything because they didn't want me to start drinking again, which is really bad when your partying friends don't want you to start drinking again. They were very protective. It was pretty cool. But, you know, like, I'm hanging out with all these people, and then I'm going to meetings, and I just couldn't, like, I was trying to live this, like, double life. And and eventually I got to this point where I just, like, you know, I talked to my sponsor about it, and, you know, she could tell me until she was blue in the face, like, what I needed to do, but I needed to come to it on my own terms. And I was sitting outside this meeting, and I didn't want to go in. And, you know, I had, I don't know, 6 months of sobriety, I think, and I sat there, and I had this moment, and I went through serenity prayer in my head, and, you know, I just had to break it down, and I just had to go through everything, and, you know, I just had to accept the fact that I was an alcoholic, and, you know, I just take it a day at a time and just walk into this meeting and see what happens. And so, like, 8 years later, here I am at an international conference and speaking at a panel for WIPA. Never, ever would I think that was what was going to happen. You know, I dove into the program after that and started working the steps to the best of my ability. Started talking to newcomers. You know, that girl that was 16, we became friends. Started hanging out all the time. In early sobriety, there wasn't that many young people, but there was younger people, and their idea of a good time on a Friday night was like hanging out, playing Trivial Pursuit. And that game is awful. I hate that game. I don't know, no one knows the answers to questions unless you study them, and that's what they did. They like studied the answers. And so I was like, you know, this can't be all there is. And, so eventually, a bunch of people started coming. I can do a time check. A bunch of people started coming in that were you know, in their early 20s and stuff like that. And I was still the baby because I was, you know, I turned 18. That was really exciting. I didn't get carded for cigarettes anymore. You know, we started hanging out. We started going to shows and, you know, doing all this like stuff together. And we started like traveling and, you know, going to all these different places sober. And we were doing it. We were having a good time. Eventually, I was 3 years sober when I went to, I think it was three, what year is it? I think it was 3 years sober when I went to San Antonio. My concept of time is absolutely gone. I have no idea. But I went to San Antonio and I walked into the YPOD meeting, and it was bigger than this. It was like a long room. And we sat in the back and everybody okay? I don't know what that was. So I sat in the back of the room and like I walked in and, you know, they were introducing themselves and they did that whole "we love you" and I was like, oh, there's a lot of chanting in here, and it freaked me out a little bit, I'm not gonna lie. And you know, so we sat through the meeting, and I mean, it was awesome. I just wanted to experience it because, you know, I hadn't been to any like official like YPOD thing, and you know, it was a good meeting, and I heard what I needed to hear. And you know, I wasn't exactly set on a YPOD, but you know, I met a girl and I started chasing that girl, and I got involved with the Maryland Big Committee for AQIPA. And we were bidding to bring the International Conference of Young People in AA to Maryland. And I became the hotel chair, which was the worst first position ever to take on. Some people have done that, and I see that. I had no idea what I was doing, but I figured it out. And I went to San Francisco that year. It was an awesome conference, and I've been to every AQIPA since then. I got involved, and that was my introduction to service work, and that was my introduction to, you know, kind of where I found, like, I think it's weird when you love that level of service, like area service and stuff like that, but I do. I really enjoy it, and, you know, I enjoy bidding. I enjoy going to, like, intergroups and general assemblies. That's weird, right? So, see, there's, like, nobody that loves that. But, you know, I started getting really involved in that stuff, and to be honest, about that time, that's what, like, revamped my sobriety. You know, I was 21. I turned 21 in AA. That was pretty freaking awesome. Best birthday ever. My adoptive parents got me a stripper. They're in the room. It was a surprise birthday party. I turned 21 on a Sunday, which if I was drinking, that would have been pretty lame. But I wasn't. It was pretty cool. And there's a bunch of people in AA that came over, and there's a stripper. It was really kind of weird, but it was awesome. I don't know what I was talking about besides that, but, I don't know. So it revamped my sobriety. I started getting involved in all the service work, and, you know, I was outreaching to all these different meetings, and I went to, like, my first intergroup meeting, which, like, when I was newer, that seemed so intimidating. I was like, intergroup, like, there's, like, serious, like, AA people, and I walked in, they were nuts, you know? They just, like, they would argue about stuff, and, you know, as I started getting involved with the bid committee and, like, learning about, like, Robert's Rules of Order and all this other stuff, I'd sit in intergroup, I'd be like, you're doing it wrong. I was like, that's not how you're supposed to do that. But, you know, it was pretty awesome and getting involved in that stuff. And, you know, this year I didn't want to be on the bid committee, and I went to that meeting, and here I am, the chair of the bid committee. So that worked out really well. I blame Mikhail for that one. I don't know. It's just, you know, like I said, getting in here, you know, they say in the big book, we stopped in time. And I had the opportunity to do that. And, you know, a lot of it had to do with my mom being in the rooms and my introduction at a young age and, you know, going to, you know, meetings when I was little, I didn't quite understand it. You know, I knew my mom didn't drink and I knew my mom had problems. And if she ever told, like, her story, she made me, like, earmuff when I was a kid. And of course I didn't. So I learned a lot of crazy stuff about my mom. She went hard. I can't curse on the podium. I'm doing really well with that so far, too, which is nice. You know, I didn't understand it until I went through it. I didn't understand what it meant to not be able to stop. And I didn't understand any of that stuff. And I didn't want it. When I was younger, people used to try to tell me, like, you know, you need to be careful. Alcoholism runs in your family, this, that, and this. And, you know, I'm like 11, 12 years old. Like, that was in one ear, out the other. I was like, okay. It's good to know. And then I remember that first time when I realized, you know, when I was drinking, I was like, I just sat there in my head and I was like, I said, I'm going to curse, but I said, oh shit. And I was like, I think I have a problem. And then I drowned that out. Cause there's a lot of other stuff going on in my life. I was coming to terms with the fact that I may possibly be gay. And I came to terms with that in sobriety too. And it was like the same time I was getting sober, I was also coming out of the closet. So it was like this cluster of like emotions and things and a lot of crying and stuff like that. But like I said, I'm cancer, so I'm really emotional too. So it's an emotional 17-year-old kid. But don't know, it's just, it's amazing to be sitting in here, and it's amazing to look out of this room and see how many people are here, and, you know, all the love that's in this room. And, you know, we were talking earlier outside, I was smoking a cigarette before that monsoon came in, and it started pouring out of nowhere. It was like a waterfall. And I was sitting next to this lady, and she was, you know, she's talking about how cool it was to be here, and, you know, just all these people, and, like, we should take over a city, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I told her, I was like, yeah, it is awesome. Like, you walk around, like, you can smile at people and say hello. And, you know, like, when you're walking, like, down Baltimore, and you smile at someone and say hello, they think you, like, want something, you're trying to buy something, or then they ask you for a cigarette, you know, whatever. You know, people don't do that. People aren't, you know, we were talking about on the way up here, and, you know, how cool it is to just, you know, like, just the love, like, look around and, like, you feel like you're a part of. And, you know, I try to do that in everyday world. I work in customer service. It's really hard to do that in everyday world. But, you know, you try to be nice to everybody. You try to, you know, love and tolerance, a lot of tolerance in the customer service business. You know, just try to, you know, be one. Like, today, like, for the most part, I'm a productive member of society. I try my best. This program taught me to suit up and show up, which is why I'm here, because I'd much rather be sleeping. So that dance last night was hardcore. The older people go, like, real hard. They were dancing way longer than I was. I was like, I gotta go to bed. Like, it's too late. But you know, I just suit up and show up for everyday life. And some days it's hard. You know, I'm not perfect. I don't always do what I'm supposed to do. I don't always do the right thing, which is why amends are really awesome. But, you know, I do try my best. And, you know, thanks to this program, like, I am a different person today. You know, I get to sit here and, you know, I'm 25 years old. I'm sober. And I get to just be here for people. And I have a lot of love in my life. I have people that are there for me no matter what. You know, it could be 3 o'clock in the morning and I have something going on. And someone's there for me no matter what. This is an awesome experience, and I don't know, I got like 2 minutes left, and really I'm done. I think God's done with me now. I'm done talking. I think my kidneys are going to fall out by the end of this weekend. Like, this is the first, I think, sip of water I've had. Otherwise, it's been caffeine. I think I had like 6 energy drinks yesterday driving here from Maryland. It was crazy. It was a great drive. We had a lot of sing-along sessions. I'm so done now. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Katie. I don't know if you know this, but I've watched your relationship with your mom over the years. I heard your mom speak at a Southeast New York convention years ago, and she talked about you, and then I hear you talking about your mom, and watching the two of you just before the meeting, I mean, it's so inspirational to me and really gives me hope that Alcoholics Anonymous can repair, you know, any relationship. So thank you for that example. Our last speaker today is Chase S. from Georgia.
Hi, everybody. My name's Chase. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chase. We love you, Chase. Lots and lots and lots.
Yeah. Thank you. So I was at a young people's conference maybe a little over a year ago, and me and my friend were sitting there in the Saturday night meeting, and all that chanting, we sat there and we timed it during the entire meeting. And then I'd recently counted how many young people's conferences I had gone to, and I did rough math on this, and it was about a month of my life has been spent listening to lots and lots and lots and whole bunches. So needless to say, young people's conferences, IKIPA, is a very important thing to me, and it's an honor and a privilege to be here and talk today. I want to thank you guys for everything you guys said. My sobriety day is May 4th of 2005. I got sober when I was 17 as well, senior in high school. Woo-woo. Dropped out, went to treatment. So I was thinking about a few things before this. The first one was, like, I had a few people come up to me and ask me if I was nervous before I did this. And I'm always nervous doing something like this. And I think it's just because, like, I always want to share, like, what I know and what I want to impress people with. And you know, I always had to, like, take that moment beforehand and, like, try to calm down and just realize, like, I'm nobody special, like, coming up here and talking. Like, I'm just another alcoholic sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And you guys probably won't even remember a thing I say afterwards anyway. And so it really doesn't matter. I've been thinking since I got the invitation to come and talk, like, what was I going to talk on? Because it's, you know, the topic's young people in AA. And, you know, it's just so generic. And I was thinking a lot about some of the stuff that you guys talked about, just like growing up in AA. You know, I got sober when I was 17 years old. And I'm from Georgia, by the way. Everybody's repped there where they're from. So, yeah, I'm from here. Welcome. But I was born and raised here, and my dad's an alcoholic. And growing up, like, I saw this destruction of alcoholism, and I always said, like, I'm not going to be like my dad. And that was not a path that I wanted to go down. And I had no intentions of doing that. And then when I started drinking at such a young age, and I think that a lot of people get sober, like, this has just been my experience of what I've seen, is a lot of times young people, they just don't have much to, like, hold on to and, like, try to hold it together for, and they just crash and burn really fast. And that was my experience. Like, when I got sober at 17, I didn't have anything, like you guys talked about. Like, I didn't have a wife or kids or a job. Like I didn't even lose my, like, car and license. Like, I didn't get it, and the state of Georgia told me I couldn't even get it. Like, I never got it and lost it. And I was just, like, a disaster. I was just a disaster. Like, you know, I mean, pretty quickly I went from, you know, taking my first drink and saying, like, I want to do this as often as I could, as much as I could, to connecting with the people that were doing that as often as they could, as much as they could. And I did it as often as I could, as much as I could. And when I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And when I would stop, I would have that mental obsession that would only go away when I had more drinks. And, you know, my grades started to plummet. My home life was a disaster. I started getting in trouble with the law. You know, my family, I mean, they loved me and they supported me and they wanted me to get help. And I think that was their worst fear, was me becoming an alcoholic, because there was so much of my family that was a part of. So when that happened, I know my mom was terrified of that. And so that's what I did, you know? And so when I got sober at 17, I didn't know what sobriety was, you know? I didn't know what AA really was. I knew what alcoholism was, and because I'd seen it. I'd seen people. But I didn't know what sobriety was, and I didn't know what AA was. And I got sober. I ended up going to a treatment program in Montana. And my first experience with AA, I told this story recently, and, like, if you're, like, an old-timer, like, I'm by no means saying, like, any offense to old-timers. This is just, like, my perception of my first meeting. It was in Montana, and I, like, went in, and it was, like, a smoke-filled room, and, like, it was all old dudes, to me at the time. And this was Montana, and so they were, like, these, like, burly, like, mountain men. And they were, like, talking about, like, the weekend AA softball game, which was weird, like, these dudes playing softball. And I just remember, like, thinking to myself, like, oh, great, like, this is exactly what I thought AA was going to be like, and this does not seem fun at all for a 17-year-old. And, you know, finally, like, I got to a point when I was in treatment, and then when I kind of came home, too, back to Atlanta, of that, you know, it talks about in our book, That Boy Whistling in the Dark, and getting to that jumping off point where he can't imagine life with or without alcohol. And I got to that point, and I didn't know really what to do. Like, I knew I couldn't go back to the life I was living, and I didn't really want to at this point. And the only other option that I at least kind of saw in front of me, because I wasn't that happy, was these people that I saw who I could tell that they drank the way I drank and they felt the way I felt, but they were doing something different. And so I started working those steps. And, you know, I had no life skills when I first came into AA. Like, you know, I even though I was a senior in high school, I think, like, on paper, I was, like, a freshman because I was just failing everything. And so I didn't know how to just live life. And I thought that I was going to, like, get sober and everything was just going to get better. Well, things didn't just get better just because I got sober. Like, I thought that I didn't have a car, but I thought I'd, like, come home from treatment and have a car, you know? Or, like, I dropped out of high school and, like, I would get an acceptance letter to college, which I didn't apply for. And slowly I realized those things weren't going to happen. And I had to learn how to live life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes it was really small things and just, like, you know, being nice to my family and my mom and not being a brat all the time, to, you know, writing my first resume, to, you know, showing up and doing things and holding a job for the first time, you know, not spending all my money, you know, when I get my first paycheck. Like, I had to learn just, like, these small, like, life skills in the beginning. And, you know, it was people in AA that taught me how to do that stuff. And so, you know, through working the steps, like, my life started to change. You know, one of the things that sometimes I get emotional when I do this. Not always. I get more emotional listening to you guys get emotional. But I was thinking a little bit about, like, how different my life is from, like, when I came in to where my life is now. Like, I didn't have anything. Like, people didn't want me around. I didn't have any friends. Like, today I have that stuff. And a lot of that is through getting connected with, like, young people in AA and getting involved in service work has taught me so much about that. You know, ICKYPA, which is the International Conference of Young People in AA, I went to my first ICKYPA in L.A. in 2007, and I haven't missed one since. And it's going to be in Miami this year. I'm just going to give a plug for that really quick. Labor Day weekend. Yeah. So some of them are here, so you should pre-register. It's going to be awesome. But I went to my first ICKYPA, and, like, when I came home from treatment, like, I thought I was in this treatment center with these, like, young guys, and we were, like, the only sober young people anywhere. And then we dispersed, and we were, like, the one young person in whatever city we went to. And when I came home from treatment, I kind of freaked out, and I called our local intergroup, and I was given a meeting to go to, and I went to it that night, and thank God, like, it was a young people's meeting, and I got connected with some young people, and I first got connected with people who were involved with GICKYPA, Georgia Young People's Conference, and I got involved in that, and I bid it, and I hosted, and I learned about service work, and that introduced me to ICKYPA, which I went to, and then I bidded and I hosted, and I learned so much about, like, how to interact with people, and these people who, like, I started just having so much fun, and I started building these relationships, and that in turn introduced me to general service, where I was able to, you know, first become a GSR and a DCM, and, you know, currently I serve as our co-chair for PICPC for Area 16, Georgia. And I learned so much about, like, life and how to interact with people. And I was thinking earlier this morning, actually, about how I destroyed my life before I came in here, and I didn't have anything, and I didn't know where I was going to go, and I was thinking about my current job, which I have, I work for that treatment center in Montana. I do some business development work for them, and I have, like, no formal training in the job that I do, and everything I learned was through what you guys taught me and about ICKYPA. And basically I do outreach, and which I learned from bidding and hosting ICKYPA. And I was sitting up here and I was thinking about my first like work conference I went to, and like nobody was coming up and talking to me at my booth. And I called a friend of mine. And he was like, dude, you got to go to the store and get candy and put it on your booth. And I was like, oh, I know that from Icky Paw, you know? So I literally, like, I've just grown up in here. Like, everything I know is from you guys. And, like, so what's my life today, more than just, like, my job. Like, I've had a lot going on in the last 2 years. Some of the most difficult things that I've gone through in my life have been in the last 2 years. And I've really had to, like, shown up and suit up and really live the principles of this program in my life. And that's something that I couldn't have done before I got sober. One of those things was a little over, I don't know, two years ago, my mom had been in and out of AA for a while and just couldn't stay sober. She'd gone to treatment before, and I got a call, and she just wasn't doing well, and I ended up having to take my mom to the hospital, and she ended up going to treatment in a place in Utah, and this is like family day apparently here today, because my mom's up here with a year and a half sober. And I like she was there for me when I couldn't be there for myself, and then, you know, this time, like, I was able to be there for my mom. Like, I can be that son today that shows up and suits up and is able to just be a good son. And, like, when a family member is gone, needs help, like, I can be there and I can help. And I couldn't do that before, you know? Another thing that's happened is right around the end of this last year, I found out my dad, who's an alcoholic, he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and just because of, like, the shape he's in from his drinking, he's basically been in the bed for, like, the last 6 months. He's in a nursing home. He weighs, like, about 100 pounds, and, you know, it's, like, it's not good, you know, and, like, I've been able to look at him and see, like, this is what happens if I start drinking now. Is I end up where he's at. And that's not where I want to be today. But I can, like, even though me and him don't have, like, the best relationship and he hasn't been there a whole lot in my life, I've been able to just be the son to him that I would want to be. And we've been able to, like, build probably a better relationship than we've ever had in my entire life during this time, because I've shown up and just, you know, sitting around watching TV with him and spending time. Like, I've been able to do that stuff, and I wouldn't be able to do that. And, you know, my mom, like, if you guys weren't here to help her, like, she wouldn't be sober here today either. And the last thing that I want to say is, you know, I think a lot, just because I got sober young, of, like, why is it that I'm still sober, you know? Because I think that it would be weird for me not to, like, question that. Like, I don't think that's bad that I question that. And like, you know, I wonder, like, oh, was it a phase? Was it this? Was it that? And, like, when I take inventory and I look at, like, what my life was like, it wasn't a phase. Like, it's pretty clear. Because I know non-alcoholics where it was a phase and they, you know, weren't, like, pronounced dead from drinking and, you know, just, like, continued the next day. But the reason I'm here is not, like, out of that fear of going back to it. I mean, like, I don't think anything good would happen, but it's because of the quality of life that I've been given. You know, I came into this program, I had nothing. AA has given me the life that I've always wanted. And if I was to be drinking today, I wouldn't have that. Like, my life wouldn't be better because I'd be drinking. Like, I came in here, I've been able to live out my hopes and dreams, and I've seen other people do that. I've seen other people come into AA and just do things, like, that I can't even, like, comprehend. That, like, their life went from here to here and the transition that it made. And, like, my life is incredible. Like, I honestly believe I have the best life in the world today. And I wouldn't trade it. And that's why I keep coming back, is because of the amazing life that I've been given. And I want to continue to show up, and I want to continue to see what life has in store for me, you know. And I look around this room, and like I come to this, and I see so many friends from all over the country, and you know, some that I've met from other places. It's such a cool deal, and I'm so excited that everybody's here in Atlanta, in my home city, for this thing. So thank you so much for allowing me to come, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.